going to call the House Committee on Healthcare to order. We have two bills ready to work and maybe one or two others to discuss in work session. We're going to work House Bill 721 and House Bill, I mean Senate Bill 721A and Senate Bill 444A today. And we may comment on a couple of the others that we have in mind. So I will open a work session on Senate Bill 721A. What do we have here, Mr. Administrator?
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 721A with the dash A7 amendments defines referee governing body. It requires both league governing body and referee governing body ensure coaches and referees receive annual treating on recognizing and seeking proper treatment for concussions. It requires coaches not allow athletes participate in athletic event or training until certain specified conditions are met. It requires referees not allow athletes participate in athletic event in which the athlete exhibits signs or symptoms of concussion. It requires league develop guidelines and materials to educate athletes, parents, legal guardians, and coaches of signs and symptoms of concussion. It requires athletes and parents acknowledge receipt and review of educational materials. It allows league governing body hold informational meeting prior to the start of the season regarding symptoms and warning signs of concussions.
And we have an amendment on that bill?
That was the amendment. That replaces the measure.
Senator Haywood, would you just like to comment on the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senator from District 17, and one of the chief sponsors for Senate Bill 721. In response to the concerns raised at the public hearing on 721 in this committee, we've worked very closely with Chuck Kears, who's the Executive Director of Oregon Youth Soccer, and with Roger Hamilton, who's the co-chair of the Oregon Referee Committee, and then again with Dr. Chestnut and Mr. Kraki, both of whom have been instrumental in both this bill and Max's law 4 years ago. And in response to the concerns, including the one that club leagues often have very little to do with the training or certification of referees, the amendment creates a separate definition for referee governing body as a group that trains and certifies individuals who serve as referees for non-school athletic team events. And it specifies that the league governing bodies are responsible for the training of coaches, parents, and players, and referee governing bodies are responsible for the training of referees. And there's also concern that the referees only have contacts with players for a single game, don't have ongoing relationships with them, and the solution to that is that the amendment specifies that referees are only responsible for pulling a minor out and keeping them out of the single game that the referee is officiating if that minor displays the signs or symptoms of a concussion after head trauma in that game, and they have no ongoing responsibility to keep that minor out of future play. The coach is the one who will remain responsible for protecting that minor until they've been cleared by an appropriate health official. Other changes, the amendment states more clearly that leagues do not have to develop their own training materials but can use existing materials, which, as I believe I mentioned in my original testimony, are available online and free to provide concussion training. And it specifies that a parent or legal guardian, not the children themselves, must acknowledge that their children have received concussion-related guidelines and materials when they're of the age to be required. Finally, it removes the requirement that the leagues file an affidavit with the Secretary of State's office that they are in compliance with the law. The group decided this was not necessary and that passing the law itself would require the club leagues to comply to the best of their ability. And finally, and last but not least, the intent of Section 7, which is the one that Mr. Larson mentioned about allowing leagues, is a may clause, and it's very clear that this is just not a requirement by any means. It's just saying that if a league chooses to do this, then that's one of the ways they can deliver the education to participants in their league, children and families. So it's an option as one of the ways to do it. It's not a requirement. The intention is that it not be a requirement, which is the reason that the word may was used.
Are there any questions, Senator?
Actually, Mr. Chair, just real quick, I want to see if any discussions came up, because lots of times you're dealing with volunteers at a lot of these. I mean, I've shown up at football games, they don't have anybody to officiate the game. They say, hey, can you do it? And I'll go out and do it. So is this going to open me up to be liable if anything happens in that game? Because I don't handle the situation as an official fort?
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, that's a legitimate question and concern. It's not one that has been raised to us before. My instinctive reaction, but I'm not an attorney, and would not want to make a clear statement, is that you would not be, in part because the coach would certainly be the one responsible. The referees are sort of a secondary enforcement. And in part because I think anybody who's volunteering doesn't really qualify as a referee who's part of a trained league. And this really only applies to leagues. The bill language is pretty specific that it only applies to people who are participating in league sports. So, for example, that means that this does not apply to individual martial arts studios, right, because they're not part of a league. So if those people aren't liable, I would doubt that a volunteer referee in this situation who isn't part of a league, even part of the referee governing body, would be liable under this bill.
May I follow up? So as the coach of a team and you play in a league, so I'm a volunteer coach, and I would be liable at that point then. So
not that you'd be liable, that you'd be responsible.
That's the same. Well, I'm just wondering, am I open to lawsuit from a parent?
Open to lawsuits when you walk across the street.
Yeah, well, with this being put in statute, it kind of makes it a little clearer for attorneys, and I think it's going to be hard to find coaches in some of these leagues.
Well, it's true that the coaches that are regular volunteer coaches of those teams are going to be responsible to do that. Does that mean that it opens them up for liability? Maybe. But if they do what they're supposed to do, they're supposed to be trained in this area, and they're supposed to be behave on behalf of the kids.
Yeah. I've spent a lot of time coaching.
If you volunteer to be a coach, you're going to be liable for something or other if he decides to sue you. This does not give you protection against being sued.
I know it doesn't give me protection. It opens me up.
Volunteer to be a coach.
The referee.
Mr. Chairman, I guess your comment, don't bother to be a coach, is part of what concerns me about this piece of legislation. I am a former neighborhoods coach for I don't know how many years. Was certainly confronted by some interesting circumstances from time to time, and unanticipated, I might add, and frankly not well trained for these kind of issues, which is unfortunate, and I think the beauty of this bill. But I guess I'd like to have somebody with legal expertise discuss the implications of what we're doing here. I don't know whether we're improving the situation or dramatically increasing liability or what. And when I read it, I'm not sure how concerned whether I need to be concerned or whether I should take a deep breath and say we need to move here, because undoubtedly, I have a granddaughter right now. She's some big hotshot player, and she's had some concussion issues, and it's been very fascinating to watch my daughter work with the physicians on trying to decide, since she's their top player, whether she can play or not, and that makes a huge difference to all those in high school are competitive. But I think there's, if we're not careful, we open a can of worms here, and like to be sure that we're not doing that.
Mr. Chair, if I might. Mr. Cracky, who's an attorney and has been very closely involved with this, sometimes is here today. With your permission, I'd like to invite him to sit with me and help address this if this is a serious concern of the committee and yours.
I would prefer not to try and have pseudo-legal advice.
Well, he's an attorney, is he not?
Yeah. The concern is, he's not your client, he's not my client.
It's hard to find people to coach lots of times. Sometimes it's who draws the shortest straw for some of these leagues, and now they're like, oh, I'm not going to want to do it, and we don't want to create that environment, and that's what I'm concerned about.
The
environment I believe we want to create is one that protects kids, and right now these kids are not protected.
That's
what
right.
This bill does is it trains coaches and referees to recognize the signs of concussion and to behave responsibly. If they don't behave responsibly, are they opened up for a lawsuit? I don't think we're going to get the answer to that in this committee. The fact is, our decision is whether this improves possibility of preventing kids from inappropriately, after concussion, being black, playing where they can get another concussion, it seems to me.
Mr. Chair, then why don't we mandate that the parents go, because they're responsible for their own child, because they're watching the game and can see what's going on.
Because you would say over and over, as you say, we shouldn't be mandating what parents do.
And this bill does mandate for the parents to be educated as well, Representative Widener. That's just part of the mandate of this bill.
And that's the amendment?
Excuse me, that was already in the original bill. This bill is essentially, if I may, Mr. Chair, exactly like the bill that we passed in 2009 for high school sports. They're almost exactly the same. Parents, kids over the age of 12, coaches, referees.
Mr. Chair.
Done?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah. May I just comment briefly? I think that the liability question is a legitimate one, and the reason is when you set a standard in statute and something happens and the standard has not been met, there is a presumption of fault. And in the case that Representative Widener cited, which is volunteers stepping in, which I have done also, to referee a game, that was a one-time experience. I'll never do that again. The most thankless job in the world is either school board or being a Little League coach. Either way, I'm not there. But the failure to meet the standard becomes a presumption of fault, whether or not, in fact, the person was at fault. And so there is a risk there. I think when you're volunteering and you're not being paid, the risk is significantly less. But the difference between the high school sports level and the levels that I think we're talking about now is twofold. Number one, it's the risk of a concussion, which in high school sports, where the speed goes up a lot and the impact goes up and the size goes up, the risk is greater. And the fact that the referees, umpires, and the coaches are being paid is a fundamental difference. I'm concerned about the safety of kids. My oldest son had a concussion playing high school football. That's why he never played in his senior year, because that was it. But so I'm very cognizant of the risk. I've known people who've had multiple concussions and the problems that can come with that. It's a problem that should be taken care of. But I'm concerned about what the effect would be on volunteerism. And, you know, many Little League organizations are very poorly funded. They're staffed completely by volunteers, mainly parents. I think there's legitimate concerns being raised. I'm not sure how to address them and still accomplish the goal of the bill, to be honest.
I have a motion on the amendment.
Did we, Mr. Chair, Mike, can we talk a little about it?
Let's get a motion on the floor, okay, and then we can discuss
it. Mr. Chair, I move that the amendment to Senate Bill 721, which is the dash A7, dated 5/14/13, be moved.
Yeah. Representative Hank Geyer moves that House Bill 721, the amendment with the dash 7 amendment, dated 5/14/13. Is there any discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I just wonder if we could have legislative counsel come and discuss these amendments. I guess I'd like to ask some questions about what they do or what they don't do. My real concern here is, and they're fabulous intentions, you know, and I understand this pretty personally. You know, when McKinsey had her second concussion and I found out she was being put back on the lacrosse team, which has a little bit of speed, she's the fastest player in there. I was ballistic, I think might be a way to describe it. I think we're getting on very dangerous turf when we do this, and I want to be sure that in our good intentions we don't screw the world up. And I have to admit, with Representative Conger, some of my efforts at volunteer coaching took great courage and it was done in my youth.
What What specific questions would you like?
Well, I'd like to understand whether this is going to impact liability, and I guess I'd like to understand at what level people are supposed to diagnose and make appropriate decisions about something that's, at least in my limited experience, is a little tough to determine. How extensive is a concussion on a field location kind of thing?
Hannah Lai.
Can you see if you can get her to join us? Well, no. We'll stand at ease and see if we can get a lynch counselor out of here.
All right. Thank you, bitch.
We need to gavel back in again.
All right.
We're back in session. Please.
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, my name, for the record, my name is Dan Gilbert from Legislative Council.
I have a specific question to ask you.
Yes, sir.
The question is it your opinion that House Bill 721, as amended with the with the dash 7 amendments, increases the potential liability of coaches and referees over the situation we have now?
It's a simple question. No. I'm sorry, that was inappropriate. It's not. It's a very serious question.
Chair Greenlick, I apologize. I honestly, I just saw, am seeing this now for the first time. I'm covering for the drafter. I just need a second to read it.
Would you like more than a second?
That would be very much appreciated.
Why don't I?
Would you like some Gordon Dexter?
We'll close the hearing to be reopened. I mean, the work session to be reopened after we deal with the next item, and give you at least a few minutes to review it.
Thank you.
The answer is you want to handle it after that review. We can hold the session over.
Right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Next Wednesday. So take a chance, look it over. If you don't want to, and that's the question before us. Is that simple question? Are
whether
coaches and referees worse off with this bill than they are? Are they more likely to become liable because of this bill than over the situation without this bill?
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I just, if I could just source a Representative Kennenberg's question. The actual quote was, it's a simple question, Doctor. Would you eat the moon if it were made out of ribs? And it was a Saturday Night Live skit where Harry Carey, played by Will Ferrell, asked Jeff Goldblum, it's a simple question, Doctor. Thank you.
What was the answer? We need to get that on the record.
I think he responded back and said, aren't you dead? Because Harry Carey had died by that time already. I think that was the answer.
The recording is still on.
We don't need
anything. What are we doing? Adjourning?
That's why we don't.
Okay, we can leave this open. Let's move on to Senate Bill 444A, open a work session on 444A. And if we have any other legal questions, we'll give you those as well on this one. Yes, sir, what's in 444A?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 444A makes smoking a vehicle with a minor Class D traffic violation enforceable only as a secondary offense. It increases violation to Class C traffic violation on subsequent offenses.
Do we have a motion on Senate Bill 444A?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 444A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves Senate Bill 444A with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on Senate Bill 444A? Would you call the roll on Senate Bill 444A?
Representative Whitener?
No.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative Kinnamer?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Excuse.
Representative Klim?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
And Chair Green?
Aye. Motion carries. Is this your bill, Representative Thompson?
I believe it is.
Would you rather somebody else carry it on the floor?
How about if we co-carry it?
You and me?
Yeah.
It's a deal.
Okay.
Thompson and Greenlick will carry it on the floor.
Dynamic duo.
I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 413 for the purpose of discussing some amendments that we have. It's 413, right? And I'm going to ask Mr. Savage to join us and give us a little perspective on the three amendments that we have before us. Which of those three, Mr. Administrator?
Mr. Chairman, as the committee, the Dash A6 amendment requires DCBS and Oregon Health Authority to develop standards for evaluating insurers' cost containment and evaluating cost containment goals and results and reviewing rate requests. The Dash 7 amendment requires annual notice enrollment enrollment and renewal notices and all marketing materials, newsletters, and communication from insurer to enrollee containing information about rate review process and how to provide comment and participate in public hearings. Address of DCBS rate review website, instructions for how to sign up, receive rate filing notifications, instructions for how to receive rate filing notifications and formats out of the DCBS electronic mailing list. It requires insurers subscribe requesting enrollers and enrollees on DCBS electronic notification system. The Dash 8 amendment requires DCBS to establish a public process to determine annually official medical trend abused in all rate review filings. It requires insurers establish how their population varies to justify variance from the established trend.
Thank you very much. Mr. Savage, would you like to comment on any of those? I appreciate any insight you can help us with.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Lou Savage, Oregon Insurance Commissioner, thanks for asking for our comments. We got these yesterday and took a brief look at them. So let me go through the three amendments and just give you some comments. First, I would say that we're not taking a position on any of the amendments, but just from our perspective, we've had discussions on the Dash 6s. We've had discussions within the insurance division with the health authority and the governor's office about the cost containment issue and whether there'd be an opportunity to use rate review, insurance rate review, and build cost containment into that review. So that's certainly something we have been looking at, and we're intending to move forward in discussions as to whether the legislature wants to actually put an amendment into the Senate bill. I think that's your decision, but certainly it's something that we have been and will continue to look at as a part of rate review. The January date. January 2015 date is probably okay. I mean that was the timeline we were looking at. But again, it's a question of whether you would actually want to put it in a statute. The A7s. My understanding of the A7s is that this is a provision that was in the original Senate Bill 413. I think it was taken out in the committee for reasons that I think the industry could probably explain to you. We, of course, always support notice. Question is whether it's logistically doable. And again, that's a question, I think, for the insurers, because it would be something that they would need to do. And then the notice would be provided, and folks hopefully would participate in the hearing process that we've had set up for a couple of years now.
And the main thrust of the notice in this case would be to alert people that they can sign up for regular routine notice. Is that right?
Correct, which they can do now, but there's not a specific notice to individuals about that. So people can get individual notices on a particular carrier that they would want to be interested in following.
And that's what they would sign up for. They would sign up, I'm a Providence Health Plan member, and I'd like to be notified anytime there's any business before the commission about Providence Health Plan. Is that how it would work?
Yeah, my understanding is that that's how it would work, that once the filing took place, the proposed rate increase, that notice would go out.
Thank you.
On the Dash 8s, this is an issue involving medical trend, and it's a fairly complicated area. We agree with you, Mr. Chair, that it's something that ought to be looked at. We think it would be best to be folded into the cost containment discussion, because it really is a part of cost containment. There are a couple of issues in the amendment itself that we're a little concerned about and frankly haven't had enough time to dig into. One, and I'll just point this out, one of the issues on line 14, which speaks to the unique characteristics of policyholders or certificate holders of health benefit plans, there may be an issue with the ACA because unique characteristics of policyholders is actually not something that the ACA allows. There's a very short list of considerations that need to be taken into account when when rates are set. So again, it's something we would need to dig into, and I wouldn't be comfortable at this point saying that we'd be okay with that. I guess the other thing I'd point out on this amendment is we would probably have to do annual rulemaking. That's, you know, that would be okay. We do a lot of rulemaking, but we would want to make sure that the standards and the guidance that we get from the legislature on this is pretty clear, gives us enough flexibility that we can move forward on a rate review.
If you all had a chance to look at the Dash 8, so Will, it's something I introduced into the conversation at this point, not because I really thought it would be ready to introduce as an amendment to this bill, but to start the discussion with the insurance division on how we might do that as an ongoing basis. The issue is that each health plan, whatever we call them, each insurance company, when they apply for the rate, have to include in the heart of the calculation of the rate their estimate of what medical inflation is going to be, and we end up with people. Medical trend here, with people ending up with different estimates for what medical trend should be, and then the insurance division having to argue with them as a part of that whole process if they think it's inappropriate. My sense is we ought to all start from the same place with one official estimate of what the general inflation, the general healthcare inflation is going to be, and then allow them to argue for a different use in their own rates if they have some special reason to it. Maybe it isn't the nature of the population. Maybe it's something else. But I would feel perfectly comfortable working with you and perhaps creating a bill for the next, isn't that far away till February? And it's not going to happen in this round anyway, so.
Mr. Chair, that's right. The rate proposals have been filed, as you know. I think it's part of the cost containment discussion, so it really would fit into that. Just in terms of how we look at medical trend now, it's a backward look. And the question I think that you pose is, you know, how do we do much more of a real-time look at what medical trend could be?
Yeah, it's always 2 years behind anyway.
Yeah.
Just by its very nature. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
Can I ask some questions?
Please, let's ask some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Give our council a little more time to read.
So on the notification, the Dash 7, I think it is, what do you normally do for people that have signed up for your system? Is it just a one-time email alert, the rate review is happening, check this website?
Once somebody signed up, they continue to get notices.
And how often?
As often as whatever they sign up for requires. So, for example, if they sign up to be notified for on a rate proposal, every time there would be a rate proposal, they'd get the notification. Mm-hmm. There's folks
it's like
who
once actually, a year though. Is it once a year?
Well, it would be once a year. Yeah.
And from your point, I'll ask insurance this later. But from your point of view, is there any problem with when people sign up, if their email address automatically goes to you, or in some kind of opt-out system? For you handling that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kenny Geyer, I'm not sure I understand the question.
So, the question is how insurance carriers allow their subscribers to know that they can get onto your email listserv and find out about the scheduling of rate reviews and their opportunity for public comment. And is there any problem if the insurance side could do this when people sign up or renew that they automatically get onto your list? Do you know of HIPAA concerns? Is there any management concern if all of a sudden you've got tens of thousands of people coming onto your system? Anything from your point of view? I will ask them from their point of view.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Kenny Geyer, we have had some participation in the rate review process. We haven't had overwhelming participation. We would like as much participation as possible. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I don't think we are going to be barraged with requests.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you're asking, is it manageable from the division's point of view?
Just to get it into your database.
No, her question is, could regions get everybody's email and automatically put them on your system through the insurance.
Oh, okay.
And then all
I apologize.
That's what she's asking.
Rather than asking the subscriber to go and sign up for you, can
I understand. Frankly, that might cause some problems. I mean, if we had thousands of people that we had to accommodate and put into an email system, I'd want to get my IT folks here, but I would be concerned about that.
Okay.
You'd rather have them come to you one at a time.
Yeah.
And you say to them, if you send, here's how you sign up. Sign up and put your email in.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, Representative Kenny Geyer, frankly, as you know, getting unwanted emails is not such a great thing either.
He loves junk.
That's why I look as tired as I do.
Are there any other questions on it? Yes.
If we're
not planning on moving this today.
Yeah, no. If we were to move the straightforward Senate bill without the amendments, would that be a reasonable step forward in this arena? And I'm asking that because I'm seeing problems with these amendments in terms of getting them really tuned up in the time frame we have. And I'm thinking we might be better off to go back to the original bill, move that, leave the amendments to the next session, which is only about 8 months away anyway, and to have some more time to consider whether it's the right direction. Any thoughts?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, you're wanting me to tiptoe into taking a position.
I guess what I'm asking is, does the original bill make sense to you?
The answer is yes.
Do we need the amendments to make the original bill work, or will the original bill stand by itself?
Okay, the original bill can stand by itself.
Okay, that's what I wanted.
I think he's asking, does the original bill do anything? I'm not sure if you want to.
I'll leave it to the committee to decide that.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I could real quick. Page 2 on the dash 8s, just the top piece where it's replaced line 1 through 8. How is this process going to change what you do now? So bringing in the public process, the department shall convene that includes actuaries other than relevant experts to advise the department. How's this going to affect insurance companies and your department from what you do right now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, the public process part of it would not change. I mean, I would suspect that any process that we use would continue to be public, just like everything else is today. It really would it'd be a question of the methodology itself. I mean, that we frankly do not have that sort of methodology now, and so it would change. But as I was saying earlier to the chair, we would really need to parse this out to see whether this is the right way to do it, and what the value added would be, and how it fits into the overall cost containment discussion.
Yeah, I'd like to follow on that question. You actually do have to, on a backward way, come up with your own estimate of trend in order to compare with what the insurance companies have done. This method would have you do it first and hand it to the insurance companies rather than you doing it. And I don't think you ever announce what, I mean, you obviously have to do it, but you don't make public what you do at that point.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, we actually, in our decisions, we often comment on the medical trend and whether we think it's accurate. And in a number of cases where we have rolled back the rate proposal, we've cited the difference in medical trend, that we believe that the medical trend was not what we think it should have been. So that has been a factor when we've done rate review. But as you say, it's a kind of more of a backward look. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet.
Did I hear another gulp here? Okay. Well, close the work session on... Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Let me finish my sentence. I'll close the work session on House Bill 413A and take a motion, please.
Mr. Chair, I move to suspend the rules and allow Representative Conger to vote on Senate Bill 444A.
Representative Thompson moves we suspend the rules and allow Representative Conger to vote on Senate Bill 444A. Hearing no objection, Representative Conger.
First of all, thank you, colleagues, for indulging me, Mr. Chair, and I would like to vote aye.
Conger votes aye on 444A. Let me reopen the work session now on Senate Bill 721 and ask you back up, now that you've had a chance to read it. And let me really say, I know we're putting you in an awkward position, and if it feels uncomfortable, we'll be glad to carry the bill over.
Thank you, Chair Greenlich, members of the committee. Again, for the record, my name is Dan Gilbert. If it would help, I can give what my first impression was having read the bill.
Okay,
and I'm not
please
sure.
Do.
So again, as a first look, it does not appear to me that this bill would make referees or coaches worse off. And right now, it seems that there is significant ambiguity in the law as to what is expected from referees and coaches, and that this amendment would try and clarify exactly what it is that these individuals are responsible for doing, and one that should make it easier for referees and coaches to make sure that they are acting appropriately. And I would assume it would also that it, assuming that they follow the requirements in the bill, it would likely give some legal cover if they acted properly, but then there was nevertheless a severe injury. But again, that is just a first look at the bill. And
thank you very much. Colleagues, does that satisfy, or should we?
If I could ask one question.
Sure.
The concern I had was, guy shows up, we don't have a referee, normal volunteer referee that went through the training. I show up I haven't been trained. Concussion happens on the field or whatever, I don't catch it, and not being through the training, would I be more exposed with the bill or without the bill?
Chair Green, like Representative Widener, I'm sorry, I really would need more time to give a full analysis of that, and I apologize that I just don't feel comfortable really getting into it.
Because that's my biggest concern, because that's what happens with a lot of these youth sports. It's like, shoot, we don't have anybody to referee, we don't have anybody here, hey, can you coach these guys today? So a lot of that stuff happens at the Little League levels or little soccer league levels, and I want to make sure we're not exposing people to lawsuits. So that's our concern.
How do you feel, Mr. Kennedy? You ready to vote?
Well, yeah, I don't feel very comfortable. That's how I feel about that.
You think you'll feel more comfortable if we do it next week?
Well, it would give a chance to maybe ask some other questions. I share Representative Widener's experience. You know, the problem is that you're there, and lots of times things happen, and you ask volunteers to step in and do these things. All of a sudden, they've got legal responsibilities, and I think since they're not trained under the, as I read the amendment, they have legal liabilities that they're inheriting with that. That's, you know, and not that I want anybody to ever not be willing to volunteer, and I guess that's the bigger function, is I want people to be willing to volunteer and to give their best and to have reasonable standards, and I'm not sure that this bill, which is marvelously intended to protect kids, and by God, we sure need to do it, and I had an interesting conversation with someone out in the hall about a series of injuries and how those can be potentially a problem all lifelong. So this is a very serious matter, but I just think we need to get it correct, and I'm having some questions about it.
My point, Mr. Chair, like at the high school level, I support it because the coaches are paid to coach, and they go through training and do stuff all the time.
The volunteers and the most.
No, the high school level. High school level, I support it because here the game's faster, everything. Your coaches are paid. I mean, they're getting paid $4,000-$6,000 to coach. Little guys, it's who can we find? And it's who draws the shortest straw sometimes to coach these teams.
My question, though, is not whether you will change you from a no to a yes or something like that, but it's whether you would feel more comfortable in getting your own legal opinions or something to help you vote.
I'd like the time to have to ask some questions and see if I can get some answers.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, and thank you for the courtesy.
Because if we're protecting them better, I'm supportive of it. If we're opening them up for lawsuits, I'm not.
Yes, Representative Kenny Geyer.
So I would just love to throw into the mix, as you look at this more and seek legal opinion, looking at the difference in the onus of responsibility on the governing boards versus the coaches and the referees, because not legal, but just my own interpretation, is that it puts a lot of responsibility on the governing boards of the refs as well as the coaches to make sure that this training happens for those coaches and refs. And to me, it's a governing board. These are rec sports that actually deal with a lot of money. And in their governance of this sport, I think that the very strong message that this sends in protecting our kids is really crucial.
Yeah, and I will hold it over, but my personal opinion is that if we're weighing some hypothetical potential increased risk for one or two coaches against the benefit of protecting a lot of kids from the adverse effects of coming back too early with concussions, then it's no contest whatsoever. I don't really...
Yeah, and
I mean, my legal opinion, for what it's worth, since I don't even play a lawyer on television, is that anybody's at risk for a lawsuit at any time in our litigious society. I can't even pronounce it, so I can't be a lawyer.
Litigious
society is that we've got to protect our kids, and that's what we have to worry about. But I appreciate you taking a run at this. I know we put you in an awful place.
Representative Clem has a comment.
Representative Clem, do you have a comment?
Yeah, just as we're looking at this a little more, it seems pretty clear to me that the league and whatever they're called, organizational governing bodies, that's good. I don't think that's a problem. The certainly paid people isn't a problem. It's more the incidental people. And the question, I think, for me is what is any current liability protection for people volunteering in these kinds of things just elsewhere in existing law? So if I'm, like, I have a 5-year-old, she's just went and watched her first T-ball game. She clearly wants to be in athletics now. I'll probably get sucked into one of these moments where I get said, hey, can you do it? You played soccer.
Guarantee you.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I don't want to get sued for saying yes particularly either because I never got the training. So if there's an existing outside this bill protection for volunteer coaches, it'd be nice to know that. That's somewhere else in law. Otherwise, if this is it, it clearly says a coach may not allow a member. This isn't about the governing body or anything else. It says a coach may not allow a member. Volunteers earlier in the bill defined as coach, so you're not allowed to. What's the remedy for that if that's a lawsuit? Yeah, probably not that excited about voting for something like that myself, even, without some language about incidental coaches or coach who's done more than a game or blah, blah, blah.
But it's clear right now, if you let somebody as a coach come back before they should, you're going to be liable for a lawsuit right now without any, I mean, you don't have the protection, you don't have the league's responsibility to train you. You just say, yeah, I'll be a T-ball coach, and what's a T-ball? And, I mean, you're wide open now.
It's the doctor right now.
If a kid falls down,
at the high school level, it goes to the doctor. They have to give a note to release you to play.
They don't have to give a note if they've never been
the
patient.
I have kids in high school sports. They get injured, go to the doctor. They cannot play until that doctor gives a note to release them.
And if they get injured and don't go to the doctor?
If they get injured and don't go to the doctor, then there's nobody held liable for it. Because the coach isn't a doctor. He can't tell if they truly had a concussion or not.
Well, I'm really glad we have all this concern for coaches. I'm still stuck with having my concern for kids. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 721. How many bills do we have now on next Wednesday's agenda? I really ask you guys to be here on time. We've got a ton of work. We have only next Wednesday and the ability to carry things over on Friday. I think we have 11.
That's 10.
10 left on Wednesday. We can do it easily if everybody's here, and we have...
You want me to pick 2 or 3 to just get rid of?
No, I want you to pick 2 or 3 to get done.
Thought I'd offer. Sure, nice try.
We are adjourned.